The invasion of Russia. Despite extreme hardship and difficulties, the overwhelming support for the Soviet government from the armed workers and the Red Guard enabled the Soviet to disperse the Constituent Assembly without resistance. The World War came to an end in November 1918, thus relieving the pressure of the German armies. However, the revolution was confronted with further dangers from an invasion on several fronts organised by international capitalism. In their efforts to destroy the Soviet, no money was spared. Opportunist generals were provided with funds so long as they were prepared to take an army into Russia to destroy the Soviet. International recruiting offices were opened for this purpose. At the same time, an economic blockade was enforced by world capitalism on Russia. The struggle against the invading armies lasted over a period of 2 years, sometimes on more than one front at a time. But by the end of 1920, the last of the invading armies had been driven over the frontiers. The Soviet power was finally established, and the Allied blockade lifted also in 1920. Trotsky had created, organized, and led the Red Army from the rawest material into a force which defeated invaders from all over the capitalist world. The Brest-Litovsk Peace. A dangerous threat to the revolution was contained in the German advance into Russia after the 1917 seizure of power. Peace negotiations had reached a deadlock by January 1918, the Germans becoming furious at Bolshevik propaganda. On the eve of the All-Russian Congress of Soviets, the Bolshevik section leaders meant to clearly clarify the position on peace terms in the German advance. 3 points of views were voted on. 1. Lenin, for immediate signing of the peace terms. 2. Trotsky, for the breaking off of negotiations, making it evident that German violence was responsible. 3. Revolutionary war on the Germans. The voting was 15 in favour of 1, 16 for 2, and 32 for 3. The Central Committee of the Bolshevik Party met next day. Lenin outlined the impossibility of fighting against the peace terms, however infamous, and that refusal to sign, we will be swept away, he said, and another government set up would sign it. Trotsky advocated prolonging negotiations and the issuing of international propaganda for a German revolution, which, he said, would be more important than that of Russia. Trotsky's view gained the majority, and on January the 14th, his slogan, "Neither war nor peace," was adopted at a meeting of the Bolshevik Central Committee with the left social revolutionaries. In the month of February, the German army still continued to advance into Russia. Trotsky's opinion that the weakened German armies would be finally stopped, plus great strikes in Berlin that showed tendencies of spreading, confirmed his position to sit tight and depend on a German attack precipitating a revolution. And this was still remained the majority decision despite opposition from Lenin. By February the 14th, the German armies marched through Poland and the Ukraine, encountering little resistance. The socialist fatherland was declared to be in a state of danger, and the following decree was issued. Defend every position as long as possible. Destroy the railroads before the advance. Destroy food and munition stocks rather than abandon them. Mobilize city masses to dig trenches under supervision of military experts. All able-bodied adults, male and female of the bourgeois class, must join this work. All those who resist will be shot. D. All papers hostile to revolutionary defence to be suspended. Editors and staff of these papers to join in the work of the defence. E. To shoot on sight all agents of the enemy, speculators, thieves, and counter-revolutionary agitators. End of quote. While the workers were enthusiastic to defend the revolution, the peasants refused support. A new German offensive brought them near to the capital. Lenin again proposed to the Central Committee the immediate signing of peace. Again he was defeated, this time by one vote. So critical was the situation that the Central Committee met twice a day, and speakers were limited to 5 minutes, writes Victor Serge. Finally, when it was seen that the peasants refused cooperation, Trotsky went over to Lenin's position, resulting in Lenin gaining the majority vote. Both Lenin and Trotsky were given the task of drawing up the cablegram to the Germans. More difficult terms were insisted upon. Russia was ordered to sign away the Baltic territories, Poland, Lithuania, Estonia, Ukraine and Finland. Lenin threatened to resign if the terms were not accepted. He gained the majority, and at the All-Russian Soviet Congress in February 1918, Trotsky and Kamenev reported on the peace terms, which Congress endorsed and which was finally signed at Brest-Litovsk in March 1918. Lenin reminded the Soviet Congress that the Soviet had lasted 5 days longer than the Paris Commune. Among his notable speeches at this Congress, two are worth recognition. Emphasizing the bloc between the Bolsheviks and the left social revolutionaries, as illustrating the alliance between workers and peasants, Lenin said, quote, "Never in history has any question relating to the class struggle been solved other than by violence. We are partisans of violence as long as it emanates from the exploited toiling masses and is directed against the exploiters." End of quote. Again, in presenting an historical conception of the Russian Revolution in relation to the world movement, quote, "Marx and Engels used to say, France will begin and Germany will finish the revolution. They said France would begin the revolution because during the decades of struggle, she had acquired the devotion and initiative that put her in the vanguard of the socialist movement. We say that the revolution begins more easily in a country where there is no large class of exploiters who are able to corrupt the upper sections of the working class with the loot of the colonial exploitation. Russia has begun. Germany, France and England will finish the revolution. Socialism will triumph." End of quote. After Brest-Litovsk, Russia lost 40% of its proletariat with the occupation of the Donetsk oil basin by the Germans, 90% of the fuel industry, 90% of the sugar industry, 65% of the metal, and 50% of the wheat. The left communists proclaimed Brest-Litovsk's peace as the slow death of the revolution. The left communists and the left social revolutionaries drew nearer to one another in criticism of the Brest Treaty. They considered it a greater evil than the war. Lenin and the majority waited for the collapse of Germany and world revolution. Unity was achieved when the opposition was granted representation on the Central Committee at the 7th Bolshevik, now Communist Party, Congress. Pointing to the difficulties confronting the countries of Europe in overthrowing the bourgeoisie, Lenin at the 7th Party Congress said, quote, "One of the essential differences between a bourgeois revolution and a socialist is that the former, born out of the feudal order, builds up its economic organs little by little in the heart of the old regime. If only by the development of commerce, which gradually modifies the whole appearance of feudal society. It's quite otherwise with the socialist revolution. Here we have much more than the task of destruction. We have infinitely the more difficult task of organization. It's quite true, without the German Revolution, we shall perish. Perhaps we shall not perish in Moscow, but at Vladivostok. In any case, we shall perish without the German Revolution." On the nature of the Soviet state, Lenin said, "It's a new type of state, without a bureaucracy, without a police, without a standing army. A state which substitutes for bourgeois democracy a new type of democracy, forces the toiling masses into the vanguard, gives the legislative, executive and military power to the workers, thus creating an apparatus which is destined to re-educate these same masses. We are only beginning our work in Russia, and for the moment we are beginning it badly." For the rest of his life, Lenin devoted his attention to the consolidation of the Soviet state. He was seriously wounded in an attempt on his life in August 1918, but recovered to see the civil war brought to a successful conclusion and the repulsion of invading armies. He also saw the beginning of economic rehabilitation in his insistence on the new economic policy instituted in 1921, which utilized largely peasant private enterprise to revive the nation's shattered economy. In 1919, Lenin and the Bolsheviks witnessed the establishment of the Third International, an international of revolutionary Marxist parties, which degenerated under Stalin into an international agency serving the Russian bureaucracy's current policy needs. Nevertheless, the international held four congresses during Lenin's lifetime, despite the difficulties of civil war and reconstruction. His last couple of years were preoccupied with the growing bureaucratization of the Soviet Union. Thus, and he says this: with the exception of the people's, that is Trotsky's, Commissariat of Foreign Affairs, our state apparatus is to a considerable extent a survival of the past, and has undergone hardly any serious change. The strike struggle in a state where the proletariat holds political power can be explained and justified only by bureaucratic distortions of the proletariat state, and by all sorts of survivals of the old capitalist system in the government offices, on the one hand, and by the political immaturity and cultural backwardness of the mass of the working people, on the other. Volume 33, page 87 of Lenin's Collected Works. We see a growing alliance between Lenin and Trotsky against this bureaucratization, as personified by men like Stalin. Lenin, in his so-called Testament, see volume 36, page 594, in this he calls for the removal of Stalin from the post of party secretary. This testament was suppressed after Lenin's death. We should not see this testament or the struggles between Lenin and between Stalin and Trotsky after Lenin's death in personal terms, but as a struggle between social forces. At the end of 1922, Lenin suffered a stroke. He continued to work between and during attacks of paralysis during 1923 and died on January 21st, 1924.